Brett, we were just looking. One of the folks out in the audience pointed this out. Minneapolis, Saturday night for the Michigan game, the high that day is 32. They're expecting it to be in the 20s. They're expecting, well, 60% chance, it says, of precipitation. So how about that for an opener?
Yeah, well, it makes that winter and spring season look pretty laughable, too. But, yeah, think of it. I mean, this is week one. It's not week 10 at this point. So I imagine it's getting a lot colder there. They don't have that Triple H dome anymore either. So, yeah, we're going to be in for an interesting weather season going deep in December up in the Northeast and in the Midwest. So, yeah, that'll be crazy.
Does that change anything about that game? I mean, that's going to be a tough guy football game regardless of the weather, right?
Yeah, for sure. And no, I don't think it changes the outlook of the game. You know, a lot of these teams are used to cold weather in general. They're right. Not used to frigid weather, but, you know, you're not getting Miami and Florida and Florida State up in the Northeast all of a sudden. So, no, I think it'll be pretty much the same style of football and a true test for Michigan's new starting quarterback, Joe Milton.
Something that came up earlier as well, and we've got weeks and weeks to worry about this, but it's just we were discussing this prior. The Big Ten's only playing 8 games with no wiggle room for cancellations. And the Pac-12's playing 6, but then they're playing that additional 2-versus-2, 3-versus-3, while 1-versus-1 plays each other in the Pac-12 championship game. So technically they get 7 games. Will the committee take into account? Obviously there's going to be different number of games per leagues. But will the committee, in your opinion, take into account a really good record? Let's say the Buckeyes go 6 or 7-0, miss a couple of games, but they look really good in the games they played, about like you thought they would look. And the cancellations, let's say there were 2, were not their fault. It was the other team that had to cancel. Is that an item that the committee should consider?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think the key here in an odd season where the number of games is going to vary conference to conference, even within conference, like you said, based on cancellations. I mean, we could have a team from the SEC that misses out a, you know, 3 or 4 games. Looks like Florida might be that case this year. But I think the key being that loss column, where over the course of 150 years of college football, one of the few constants has been how important that undefeated card really is. And that puts your name right into the discussion right away. Now, will they take a 5-0, a 4-0? I don't know. That's getting pretty thin there.
Right.
But 6, 7, 8, 9, I think in that range, an undefeated team. Now, also, if you use Ohio State as that example, hopefully on that resume they have the Penn State win, the Michigan win. You know, they have their key moments, and also they've looked pretty strong and have a nice margin of victory and you know, and pretty dominant play. So, all that considered, yeah, I think an undefeated team still gets strong consideration, even if it's a little bit shorter of a schedule.
Jumping all over the place here, and we were talking about this yesterday on Tuesday, that Penn State-Ohio State game is just a week from Saturday. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah, it's sneaking up on you here. It's and, you know, Ohio State really dodges a bullet this year because in the even years, even calendar years, they draw that whiteout atmosphere at Penn State where it's a night game, it's 110,000 all dressed in white, and, you know, arguably could be the best home field advantage on that night, that whiteout night college football.
Oh, yeah.
So they dodge that. It'll be a gray out. It'll be just the empty bleachers. But more so with personnel, Penn State's without Micah Parsons, their best player. He was an All-American linebacker there in rush edge. And then also rumors coming out that Journey Brown, their all-conference running back, might be out for the year. So injury concerns there. They're going through a coordinator change. And if one of the trends from 2020 so far we've seen is new coach, new coordinator, new quarterback, sometimes a little bit slow out of the gate. So for Penn State's sake, that's pretty tough draw week two right away. And not to overlook their week one opponent, Indiana, who I'm really – you know, I know the headliners, Ohio State, Nebraska this week. I think that this one, Indiana, Penn State, will be more competitive and possible upset there for Indiana.
Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, joins us on Wednesday. Your thoughts on the Alabama-Georgia game?
Yeah, so it was a battle for the first half. You saw a little bit of that momentum shift there at the end of the first half, them drawing that late field goal. But then in the second half, it was like when a three-point shooter heats up and, you know, like a J.J. Redick from Duke back in the day. And once they get going with these deep balls, you know, they just hit a couple of strikes and it's over. So, you know, Georgia had the staying power in the first half, but Alabama really blew it open in the second half and got to credit Mac Jones. I think you put him into the Heisman discussion. The way that he's completing these vertical passing attacks, they really established the ground game well. It looked like a complete team and really made no mistake of who the SEC favorite is right now.
Does this change your opinion or outlook on Georgia at all?
Yeah, I think it does, because when you look at the college football playoff era the last 5 years, last 6 years, it's pretty rare for a team to make a playoff run without elite quarterback play. And I think Stetson Bennett is a good quarterback. He could be potentially above average to great quarterback, but I don't think he's elite. And it's just by comparison, when you look at the rest of their roster, this roster is absolutely loaded. I mean, they won the recruiting title two of the last 3 years nationally. That's beating Alabama even. But when you look at it, yeah, quarterback looks like a potential thing that could limit them. So if you get into a shootout like they had in the second half, they didn't really have the guns to match. So that might be tough going forward.
Brett Ciancia joining us. Your thoughts on what's going on in Florida right now?
Yeah, it's a tough situation there. And, you know, when we were talking all throughout the summer, you kind of assumed this might happen somewhere. It's not really, I don't want to call it Florida's fault per se. It's just, you know, these outbreaks seem to be random, the way they're breaking out everywhere. And schools have pretty similar, in fact, I think, standardized testing. So, it's just unfortunate. So, sorry for those athletes down there that are missing out on competitions, but hopefully the health and safety comes first and they're getting cured up and ready to roll. So, yeah, it's impacting not just them. A lot of their opponents are missing games. But it's something to monitor going forward. It's actually kind of a positive, if you view it this way, that only we really had the one breakout of Florida. I mean, a lot of those pundits you see nationally were saying that this would be – that Florida would be the norm, and you would have had 15 teams, in month-long quarantines every week and, you know, half the schedule canceled every Saturday. So, I think overall it's been a pretty positive season with that. It's been a safe overall season. So, let's keep it rolling.
Brett Ciancia joining us, talking college football. We'll let you know how you can get all of his information as well. Clemson, and I had it on one of my monitors, has 52 at halftime, scored 73 at Bobby Dodd, probably could have scored 173. I'm embellishing a little bit, but it doesn't look like this is the year that one of those ACC teams, at least in one game, gives them some trouble, does it?
Yeah, I agree with you. Coming into this weekend, I thought that there were two competitors, really. I thought Notre Dame and UNC could have potentially pulled an upset on Clemson, or at least fought with them a little bit. But the way that Saturday fell, transpired, you saw Clemson put up 73, like you said. And remember, that was 7-0 Georgia Tech. I remember seeing that on, just like you, on one of my monitors, thinking, okay, Georgia
right.
Tech really coming to play today. And then it was just bombs away for Clemson. But I had two competitors coming in to Saturday, Notre Dame and North Carolina. So with Notre Dame, very one-sided. Their defense carried them against Louisville in a 12-7 grinded out win. But, hey, a win's a win when you compare it to UNC, who came out so flat against Florida State. This will look back. I mean, this will be one of those games of 2020 that I just have no explanation for. I was high on UNC. The rest of the country was as well. They had them fifth. This offense looked unstoppable. Defense was playing well. And then all of it just collapsed against Florida State. They were leaving points on the board, got down to the goal line and couldn't put it in. Fourth downs, 0-for-3. The drops at the end of the game. But really, it shouldn't have even gotten to that point. It was poor outlook. So, yeah, those were my two competitors. I don't know now. They both took major steps back in my power ratings and just overall by watching them.
Notre Dame-Pitt this weekend at Pitt. Kenny Pickett was a no-go in the Miami game. You're up there in Pennsylvania. Is he available for Saturday, as far as you know?
I think it's still questionable with Kenny Pickett. And, I really hope they get him back, because I watched that Pitt-Miami game. And, you know, Pitt's defense is great at generating turnovers. They lead the nation in sacks. They lead the nation in tackles for loss. They really got after Miami and forced King into some mistakes, a couple picks. But, man, the offense just can't move the ball. It's, you know, it reminds me of, you know, when you have a really strong defense and a really failure of an offense, kind of like it's a stretch. But all the way back to Ndamukong Suh's Nebraska team, where that was the number one defense in the country. But the offense just couldn't give them anything to work with. So they were losing games 7-6, that kind of thing. So with Pitt, yeah, they got to get that offense figured out and to be a really complete team. But right now it's one-sided, and hopefully the defense will have to get into a 12-7 shootout like Notre Dame had, and not shootout, but a grind out like they had against Louisville.
They will get after Ian Book, though, won't they?
Yeah, for sure. And it'll remind you of that opener where Duke really confused him with some coverages and new pass rushes. Look for Pitt's D-line to get in the backfield. But really, more so, just be a strength on strength, because Notre Dame's offensive line is one of the strongest units they have. In fact, it's one of the best offensive lines in the country. So when you're talking trench battle there, that'll be great. Notre Dame's O-line versus Pitt's D-line. And I'm really excited for that one.
Auburn to date, probably disappointing, and could have another loss or two. Heck, the Kentucky game could have been a loss. The Arkansas game certainly could have been a loss, too, with the officiating there at the end. Tell me what you think about Auburn.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you when I'm right, I'll tell you when I'm wrong. So I did have Florida in the playoff, and it looks like their defense, that might be a whiff. But I was right on Auburn. You know, coming in, they were ranked 11th by the AP, and every other preseason magazine had them ranked. I didn't have them ranked in the top 25. I had them 27th. And that was more so because of their transition in the lines, their offensive line and defensive line, transitioning out 7 starters of the 9. So, you know, and I thought that'd be a huge issue in the SEC, and it's turning out to be. But also, they've actually, you know, played below my expectations of them, especially offensively, where Chad Morris was coming in. The goal was to spread the ball to the receivers more, get more of a pass game to mix with that, you know, that veer option that Gus Malzahn has always ran. And it hasn't worked. Bringing in more of a passing coach like Morris, Nix is only 11th in the SEC in passing. In other metrics of passing, he's like 13th out of 14 in the conference. So it was not the desired effect of bringing in Morris. Now there's hot seat talks of Gus again, and just a team that's really struggling. So, you know, I kind of saw that back in June, and a lot of it's coming true, but I never thought the offense would be this stagnant.
I'll let you out the door on this, Hugh Freeze. Is he coaching Liberty next year?
Oh, yeah, this is what a bounce back here for the guy. I mean, they're playing great football, undefeated. I don't know. That part of it, I don't really know. When you're talking about former, you know, coaches that were fired for off the field stuff, we'll see. But I know that you know, football wise, he's proven himself to be a heck of a coach. His offenses at Ole Miss were great. I think some of that was Phil Longo too. He was down there. But, yeah, that's one of the Coach of the Year candidates, what he's doing at Liberty.
Brett, tell everybody how they can get your information.
Yeah, thanks. It's at Pick 6 Previews. That's all spelled out on Twitter, and pick6previews.com. And on Twitter we have, you know, weekly picks, daily content, all my advanced stats and numbers. I load up the Twitter feed on Saturday, too, and throughout the week. So, yeah, that's at Pick 6 Previews on Twitter.
Outstanding as always, Brett. See you next week.
Thanks, Bill.